I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to Nothing Concrete, the Barbican podcast. I'm Ben Eshmade, and on this week's edition, we travel back to 2017 and meet up with director Sally Potter, who coincidentally invites you and some special guests to the party.
The ambition here, anyway, was to write a comedy wrapped around a tragedy.
This classy bunch of people, my goodness me. Talk about looking around and going, oh, I better wake up here. These are people I admire.
In this comedy meets tragedy, we find ourselves in Janet's house, celebrating with her close friends her new job. Although doesn't go to plan, and over the next 71 minutes, relationships unravel and vol-au-vents are burnt. So the hosts are Janet, as I mentioned, played by Kristen Scott Thomas, and Bill, her husband, who is played by Timothy Spall. The guests who they usher into their home are Ginny, played by Emily Mortimer, Tom, played by Cillian Murphy, Martha, played by Cherry Jones, April, played by Patricia Clarkson, and not forgetting April's boyfriend, Gottfried, played by Bruno Ganz.
Hello.
We did it.
You know, such a responsibility.
Huge, actually.
Huge.
Around the time of the release, I spoke with the director alongside Bruno Ganz and Timothy Spall.
Sally, where did the party begin?
Oh, it began somewhere in outer space. I don't know. I'm never sure really where things begin, but I sit down and it arrives. And I think it was partly social, political observation, life observation, really, about what happens to people under conditions of extreme stress, where their image of who they thought they were, what happens in that state of disintegration.
Well, I got a script, I read it, and I liked it, and then we met, and we had the hotel in Zurich, we talked about it.
Well, it's been one of my lifetime ambitions to work with Bruno, rather a long time, ever since I saw Wings of Desire. Every time I've been making a film, I've sat with the casting director going, can we cast Bruno as a 16-year-old girl? Probably not. But anyway, finally I felt I'd written a part that was somewhat deserving of his skills and talents. I was thrilled that he was attracted to it and wanted to do it.
Next time I would even do a 16-year-old girl. Give it a try. I mean,
you know, Bruno, you're at a stage in your career where obviously you choose roles that you want to do. I presume you can say no to those that you don't like. So what did you see in the script? What did you see in this character?
Well, to me, first, really, it was a real comedy, and I was longing for some. And it was English and not German, which is, in terms of comedy, important to me. and so, well, I liked it a lot, and I wanted to do it.
So, everybody, it seems that we are expecting not one, not two, but three babies.
Wow. Congratulations. Wow.
Wow.
Was that a boast or a cry for help, Martha? I couldn't quite tell from your tone of voice.
She's very careful about casting. This classy bunch of people, my goodness me. Talk about looking around and going, oh, I better wake up here. These are people I admire, you know. Yeah. I mean, it's always great. It's say, so be careful, you know, never meet your heroes. But some of these people I've been, most of them, all of them, in fact, I've been watching and enjoying and admiring. Then to find out that they're all all pretty much the same. We all want to get it right. We're all insecure about it. But this insecurity doesn't, on the whole, manifest itself as anything other than openness and determination to get it right and friendliness and a lot of laughs, you know. So that was what the situation was. But everybody's eye was very much on the ball because we knew, you know, people were flying in and out. It was an international cast, international crew. So Sally's amazing ability to corral all this talent into one box for such a short period of time is amazing. Yeah.
Was it a challenge to write comedy or to write something so comedic, Sally?
Well, it's funny. It's a technical challenge to write comedy. Timing is everything. Precision is everything. Nuance is everything. But the ambition here anyway was to write a comedy wrapped around a tragedy. So it was always, you know, the core themes are extremely serious themes. Betrayal, ideals, health, mortality, and many other things besides. But the form of comedy exists on many levels. One is physical, one is verbal. And what I did find while I was writing it was great pleasure in writing the dialogue. I allowed myself to be wicked, to be quite savage, actually. But the savagery came out of a place of love and compassion for these characters who were talking to me in the solitude of my writing room.
And Gottfried is a calming presence. He's kind of a Zen master in this film.
Yes, he is. Yes. To a degree, it gets difficult for me. I mean, sometimes I like that he's so stupid, but she's defending him all the time. She says, no, he's a wonderful person and he loves all and he is the only one who is really loving the other people and so on. It's somehow true, but he's also sometimes really a complete idiot and that's what I like as well.
When a person becomes sick, there's always a reason. If not in this life, then in a past life.
I think, though, to be fair, by the end, we're really rooting for him because there's so much else going on and other people that we kind of get frustrated with. To have someone in there who is persistently trying to untangle things or at least, you know, listen to people is a wonderful thing.
Yeah, and then I think, you know, look, the debates about what really constitutes health and how people heal and all the rest of it, these are very meaningful debates. And it, for example, one of the things that Gottfried takes up is this notion that if somebody's given a terminal prognosis, that it's a kind of curse. Well, I've actually seen that in life. I think a terminal prognosis is a very dangerous thing because nobody really can predict whether somebody can recover or whether they're going to die, to some degree, but it's not hard science. And people are immensely suggestible. So to give people who are suffering from a terminal illness some hope is, in fact, very good medical practice. So let's say in these tiny off-the-cuff things that Gottfried might say, there lurk some real battles of ideas, things that are worth fighting for.
Well, sometimes while shooting, I had the impression that I was looking at a fish tank from outside. What are they doing? Help trying to get into it, but not, I couldn't really. Watching all the strange fishes and so on, saying, what are they doing? Oh, no, such a pity. I would like to help, but, you know, there's a lot of glass. And this kind of feeling.
Another little thing, actually, that sometimes Bruno talks about Gottfried being a bit stupid or saying stupid things. What I've found in my observation is that when people are in a second language, and Gottfried, of course, is a German in this situation, they sometimes use language in a way that to an English person can feel quite clichéd. It's an issue of meanings getting lost in translation somewhere. And that was a very intriguing thing to write with as a writer, to be on that line of somebody whose first language is not English, trying to express these important ideas in English.
He's saying things that, you know, listening to gurus, you hear them and you think these are so, it's so stupid and stupid, it's so banal and cliche and thing, because you are not a believer. If you believe him, you have to accept that this is, or you think it's great, it's wisdom and it's wonderful, but it is not for someone who is not a believer. And I think we have to get, what we do in the film is also to get closer to Gottfried and then think, no, it's not such a stupid guy. I mean, he is, there's some something good in really good. And it's not only language. It's he uses cliches, things that belongs to his world, and it's in his world, it's true. Yeah. And it's, but listening to watching such a person and you don't know him, you say, what? And it's funny because...
And Gottfried is part of one of the couples of the film as well. His partner is April, played by Patricia Clarkson, who she's quite savage, isn't she? She's not nice to him.
No, she's not. But it's somehow the truth. But yeah, she's playing. That's the way she is. She's teasing him too. I mean, and in the end, is not very surprising. So that she says, "We are the only couple here who has a chance in future." That's that's also the way of comedy. Yeah. I like that.
But also, you know, insults can sometimes be a form of great tenderness. Yeah. I mean, she does say things like, "Oh, shut up, Gottfried, your cliches are unbearable," but somehow underneath that, there's this feeling of you know, I love you. Why do you have to be so fucking stupid? It's tenderness can be expressed through insults as well.
Yeah, and she's a master of irony. She's using that perfectly. And that's always, you know, ambiguous. So.
We mentioned Wings of Desire. That's in black and white. This is in black and white. It creates a rawness. It doesn't let you hide very much, which is perfect for these characters.
Yeah, I always say, you know, black and white is more colourful because it allows your mind to expand into the spaces. You're not being spoon-fed a lot of unnecessary information in the name of realism. Yeah. So it takes us much closer to the processes of perception rather than just the process of looking.
It's more pure.
Oh, Gottfried, you're an embarrassment.
Possibly.
You've spoken about this before, but I think it's important. Halfway through filming, Brexit happened. It was already a political film before then. It seems to have seeped in somehow into the spirit of the film.
Well, I think as a writer, if you're writing in particular times and making a kind of sly portrait of the time, obviously what's going on rumbling in the air and underneath the ground and all around is going to be somewhere in it. But of course, no one ever mentions Brexit. It wasn't written with Brexit in mind. Mm. But I think the feeling of division, even within each couple, these kind of how you navigate disagreement and where you're going and what and the question of who you are, what you are, is, of course, part of the story. So it seems very much like a reflection of the wider situation as well.
Well, it happened while we were shooting, and the morning people had learned what the decision was there, and they were very depressed, all of them. We had in the beginning, in the morning, for first 2 hours, I think we had problems to get going. It was, I even saw people cry, and it was very sad that morning.
Yeah, it's a very international crew, and deliberately so. You know, so we've got a Russian DP, an Argentinian designer living in Paris, Irish gaffer, French sound crew, as well as the international cast to some degree, two Americans, German, and so on, an Irishman, and the rest English. And that feeling of that international spirit of cooperation is not like a political idea. Mm. It's a wonderful collaborative energy. And, you know, art, cinema does not have borders. You don't need a passport to enter a film. So this notion of putting up walls, putting up borders, needing more passports, driving people out, putting up the drawbridge, that fortress mentality is incredibly destructive, I think.
You know, I remember being very thrown, you know, off me balanced by it. And I still am a little bit. I don't quite know what's going on, but there we are. don't think anybody does. That's the problem. But those who know don't seemingly know, do they? That's even more alarming.
April, I too am frequently described by internet trolls as an embarrassment or worse. Much worse, actually. Is it a crime to be an embarrassment?
Martha, you're a first-class lesbian and a second-rate thinker.
Your character, Bill, he's one of the hosts of the party, but a very reluctant host.
Yeah, well, without giving away too much about what's on his mind, it's don't take much of a leap of imagination to work out why it is difficult for him in that situation and why the first 20 minutes of the story, he doesn't really say very much, but I think his silence is a cacophony because there's something, I think you can tell that there's probably, I don't know. I mean, that's what I was, it was, I knew that when I was playing it, it was me to have this boiling inside me all the time. This, I mean, I'm not going to tell you what it is, but my God, these two things that he's got a, these two delicately placed nuclear hand grenades that are thrown into this urbane social situation do tend to act slightly as catalysts in the entire thing. So although he's a very still, sometimes almost you know, catatonic character, he's riddled with a lot of danger.
And you are, you know, you are heavily in close up for that time that we've just been talking about. Yeah. And you know, your face is very present. I mean, technically, having a camera that close to you, is that a challenge?
I never take an objective view of it. I certainly don't ever look at playbacks. I never do, never will, because it's none of my business. Mm. Sometimes you wish you had, but really, it's not. You know, without getting too highfalutin about it, you know, the camera is your audience. And the great thing about camera, when it is that close, you just have to think it. You don't have to be that demonstrable about it. All you got to think about is, am I feeling this right at this moment in this part of the jigsaw? I can't say it, I can't speak it, but the camera's there. And a camera, as we always know, those of us love films are pretty forensic. And they tend to work it out often before, sometimes the camera visually is way ahead of the words.
It's true, yeah. And black and white, so it's so detailed as well.
Yeah, it's detailed. And there's also an instant vibrancy about it, isn't it? It makes it both historic and immediate at the same time, a black and white camera.
Your partner in the film, your wife, is Kristen Scott Thomas as Janet. She's incredible.
Yeah, she's fantastic. I mean, and you know, it's a testament to Sally's daring and originality to put us together as a husband and wife. I mean, it wouldn't be everybody's, you know, in a sort of mythical Hollywood world. Who are going to be the new film couple? Kristen Scott Thomas and Timothy Spall. I mean, that's. It's not for me to comment, but it appears that people think it works. You know. But obviously we're both playing characters completely different to ourselves. So, I mean, she is tremendous. She's a tremendous actress. And that in that role, to see her going through that dance of urbane sophistication and then crumbling down, like they all are to a certain degree, these incredibly successful, intellectually intact people unravelling their own themselves through these revelations. It's you know, it's that's the genius of the writing, I think, is in that, the simplicity of this idea to create this atmosphere with this terrible sense of, my God, something's not quite right here, and then just allow it to unravel so, you know, unpleasantly but so comically, you know.
Mm. And the person trying to hold you together randomly is Bruno Gantz.
What more could you want? You know, I mean, you know, yeah, and again, this fantastically distrusted, you know, idealist, alternative health sort of guru thrown in this bunch of clever cynics as well, a realist, rationalist, as my character says on many occasions. I'm a rationalist. I mean, I am a rationalist. I spent my entire intellectual raison d'etre is about rationalizing that, you know, what do I do? You know, what do I do? And he turns to the seemingly a person who would consider to be an absolute charlatan, and they become, you know, he becomes his mentor.
It's not every day that one of us becomes a minister. To Janet.
Oh, come on, Sean.
I have an announcement.
What was it like when you sort of started to see test screenings and seeing people's reaction to the film? I presume that was a really really interesting process.
Yeah, well, it was me who insisted on the test screenings in London. Nobody was asking me to do it. And the first one, we had about 20 people, and they were laughing so much you couldn't hear the soundtrack. And I thought, oh, wow, that's amazing, but maybe it's a fluke. Maybe it's just 20, and it had quite a lot of my friends. Let's do another one. So we did another one for 30 people, then 50, and then 250, and so on. And it was entirely consistent, the reaction. All that I learned was I had to put in some spaces after the lines that always got a laugh, because otherwise people couldn't hear the next line. Oh. And actually, it's still the case. I don't think I left enough space.
That's easier on stage, because you can do that yourself as an actor. Yeah. People will laugh. But yeah, even in Berlin, with international audience, I mean,
they're going crazy.
It was a lot of laughter. Yeah.
I was struck by how 1 minute I could see it was about, a prophetic tale about this snapshot of Britain today. But then I looked at it, and 1 minute it looked like a sort of French noir movie. Then it looked occasionally like some mad kind of comedy of manners from the Hollywood of the 1940s.
Yeah.
I mean, that's its richness. In the way it's shot even has that quality. You know, that monochrome, quality. You know, timed, it looks a bit like flipping, the Maltese Falcon or something. You know what I mean? And it goes from that to Jules Jim to, you know what I mean? It does all of a sudden, there are elements of it where it does become a eating comedy at times, I mean, there are elements of that as well,
And the nice thing about your character is that he sort of interjects musical selections as well, which contradict what's going on in the action.
Yeah, I mean, he's a pretty reticent character, taciturn character anyway. I think given this, he's harbouring these two massive life changing, revelations that are about to come out. I think this obsession with his music and the delicacy of the way he puts his records on and finding the right track, his old sort of analog world that he's from, he's concentrating his mind, it's a massive distraction, and the inappropriateness of the music. I mean, some of these great you didn't think that, Dido's Lament would get such a big laugh in a film, would you?
You've made an absolutely incredible career working with some of the best British directors, which Sally Potter is a strong figure of. I mean, are you proud of that association, working with some of the best?
Well, I suppose the word is, it's close to my heart that I have managed to do this. It's precious to me that, that I've found myself over the years working with some of the best talent we've gotten. It's not something I take for granted. I mean, I always jokingly, falsely, modestly say that, I seem to be, tolerated on a regular level even as I get older, I try to be as fresh in everything I do. And if ever I've had a real quest, it's, as much as you can be in control when you're in a profession where you're a hostage to fortune. Varied and different is very, very important to me personally, to try and become a different person. And by working out how that person works physically and mentally, psychologically, you take a little bit of that person with you, and then you learn a little bit more.
What have you taken away from making this film? Would you do more along the same way?
Well, this is always the challenge for a filmmaker. When you do something that doesn't work, it's clear you need to do something different. When you do something that really does work, you think, oh my God, am I ever going to be able to do it again? Or should I repeat myself? I mean, I'm always interested in exploring new ground, but I have to say, I really feel that something happened with this film, for me as a writer, that I want to explore more, because it's a very rich vein, and it came, I hesitate to say this, but it came relatively easy to me. It came out like a river. And I thought, oh, shit, I better go and have a look and see what else is in there.
I was going to finish with, I hope wherever he is, Bill's okay.
Yeah, well, we don't quite know where he is. He might even be floating around in the ether somewhere. But, yeah, no, I very much enjoyed him, poor old fella.
If you really want to run this country, for all our sakes, you will have to do something about your hair.
Thanks to both Sally, Bruno and Timothy for speaking to me. Sadly, Bruno Gantz passed away a few years after this interview. Very gentle and sweet human being. If you get the chance, do accept the invitation to watch this film when it next pops up on your streaming service, on a DVD or Blu-ray, or maybe returns to the cinema. I'm Ben Eshmade. Thanks for listening to this archive edition of Nothing Concrete, the Barbican podcast. It's here to inspire more people to discover and love the arts with weekly episodes of archive finds and theme series. Subscribe to Nothing Concrete on Acast, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. And if you can, leave us a review to help us get the word out.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.